kickoff live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
Welcome again to Big Blue Kickoff Live. As the gentleman said, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino with you till around 10:30 a.m. here on Giants.com, talking all things Big Blue as the team looks forward to the matchup against the Carolina Panthers on Sunday afternoon. Phone lines will be open throughout the show, and we welcome you to call in and have any questions or comments. Please feel free to join us. 201-939-4513 is the phone number. Again, 201-939-4513. We're heading to the third week of the NFL season. This phone number really should be locked and loaded in your cell phone, especially if you're a Giants fan. Also, all things social media, Paul, you can find us on Twitter at Giants. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can make sure you include the hashtag Giants Chat. And let's look back to yesterday. Some great news for the Giants in regard to the injury report. Only two players on the injury report. David Deal did not participate. We know what that situation is. He had surgery on his thumb, so he's waiting to heal and get back into the game. Might take another few weeks. And then limited participation, tight end Adrian Robinson with his foot. So what did you see from Adrian Robinson yesterday? He was limited. What exactly did he do, Paul?
Yeah, he did a few drills, went out, caught a few passes. You know, the Giants are being very cautious with him. Clearly, whatever that was, and they were never very specific about what the foot injury was that he suffered during the preseason, it's an elongated type injury. You know, not enough to land him, you know, on injured reserve, but it was clear from the minute that he got hurt that he was not going to be around for a while. And so, bingo. That's why he's not really doing a whole lot right now. I will say this, you know, he's 6'4", 270, Anita. Did not block very well during the preseason. And a guy with that type of body frame should have been a better blocker as a tight end. And I know the Giants knew he was a blocker in college. Why it didn't translate in the limited preseason time he had, I don't know. But that could also be one of the things that will eventually help this running game. Because when you talk about a guy who's 6'4", 270, that's a big piece of beef right there. And, you know, hopefully he's going to come back in the next couple of weeks, and that will help the line get some push.
But in looking at the tight end core here, Paul, I mean, Brandon Myers isn't a great blocker as well. But that's, in my opinion, not the reason why the Giants brought him in. The Giants brought him in for the passing game, and he's definitely become that fourth option. Actually, targeted more so than Reuben Randall, you can say he's that third option in that passing game. And looking at the tight ends here, really the only one who really can help this offensive line with blocking is Bear Pascoe.
Well, at the moment, that's the way it looks because he's been the most proficient at it. But I would like to think, again, that Robinson can get caught up to speed so that he can help in a two tight end set. Now, you mentioned Reuben Randall. Do you know they targeted him 9 times the other day? On Sunday, they knew they had a mismatch against Tony Carter, but it seemed like every time they threw to him, either Eli was awry or there was too much pressure and he just had to throw the ball away.
Well, we knew that going in that was a mismatch, but between both games, the two games that are already on the docket, Myers is targeted more than Randall.
Oh, yeah, he has been. He has been. Myers has been very productive in that short passing game, as we expected. We knew that he would be Eli's safety valve, and that's exactly the way that's worked out. But I was disappointed that the line didn't give Eli enough time and that Eli wasn't sharp enough during the game last Sunday. When you talk about a receiver getting 9 targets in a game, that's a pretty good number. And I think Randall only caught 2 balls, right? That should not happen. Not when a 5'9" corner is out lined up against you. Going into the game, that should have been a huge mismatch for the Giants. And they could not get the ball to him properly. And that's That's one of the things I think when they looked at the films, they had to feel really bad about.
Again, 201-939-4513. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Eric Kennedy join us. He's owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. Each and every Thursday, we have Eric join us just to kind of get a feel for the fans out there. What are the fans feeling? What are they looking to? What would they like to see? What are their concerns?
Probably a win.
Well, you know, obviously. Let's talk about what Justin Tuck was communicating in the locker room yesterday. And hopefully folks out there have had an opportunity to go on Giants.com and listen to a number of the players who addressed the media yesterday. And there was no sense of concern or let me rewind that. Justin Tuck told the media that if he could have five plays back in the past two games, not one game, but to the total, both games, total five plays back, he feels that those five plays would have been the difference of a win or a loss. And because of that, he feels that this team is just so close. It's not like the two losses came because they got beat by a better team. He said that we're talking about five plays that really could have made a difference. And so, yes, there's a sense of urgency in this Giants locker room to win this week against Carolina, because who wants to start 0-3? But at the same time, this team is so close that they very well could be 2-0, 1-1.
You know, I like Justin Tuck a lot. Big fan. I think he's been a great asset for this team. But, Anita, I'm going to dispute that just a little bit. I think the Denver Broncos are a better team than the Giants. I think they're a bona fide playoff team. I think they are a Super Bowl contender. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl before the season. And so the fact that they beat the Giants on Sunday was not a surprise to me. It was also not a gift. Now, did the Giants give about six Christmas packages opening day to the Cowboys? Absolutely. The Cowboys are a bad team. That was a game that, for lack of a better term, it was a charity case for Dallas. So I can understand his frustration over that game. The Denver game, yeah, the Giants could have been in it, should have been in it, could have won, yes. But Denver is a better team. So I'm gonna reserve all of my support for his comments till another time, because I cannot view Denver in the same way he does. That's a good football team.
All right, let's hear what the fans have to say. Let's bring in Eric Kennedy, again, owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there, a segment that we welcome Eric in every Thursday to get a feel for what the fans are feeling, what they're saying. So, Eric, what's the latest? Obviously, we know fans are disappointed this team has started 0-2.
Oh, they're thrilled. No, obviously, they're upset. When the Giants lose, and unfortunately, if you factor in the end of last season, somebody on the site brought up a great point during the week. Basically, they're 3-7 in their last 10 regular season games. So, and I know each season's an individual entity in itself, but it's starting to wear on fans, and then you have different reactions. But when a team loses like this, especially when you have all the optimism to start a season, fans get very excited about a new season and the high expectation level, and you start 0-2, then you have the reactions that you get are predictable. The general manager doesn't know what he's doing. The coaches don't know what they're doing. Our talent isn't as good as we thought it was, that type of thing. So you have a lot of doom and gloom going on. You do have some people who are taking a step back and saying, we can still turn this around, but we've got to stop shooting ourselves in the foot. So it's across the board, but there's a lot of negativity, as you can imagine, and fans are pretty upset. And they're not just blaming the players in this case. They're upset with the general manager. They're upset with the coaches.
Eric, I suspect that it gets worse because the Giants have not really been a terrific home team since MetLife Stadium opened. And let's face it, fans come to the games, they tailgate, they spend a lot of money, they want to see their team win, and they don't like to go home disappointed or disgusted after a home loss. And while the Giants have certainly won a lot of games over the last few years, including Super Bowls, many of those big wins were away from this building.
Yeah, and one of the most contentious debates that we have each season on the website, and that always pops up, especially after a home loss, is there's always a discussion about whether or not the home crowd is doing enough to help the Giants win. And you've seen players and the coaches mention this before about, hey, it would be great if we made more if Giants fans made more noise. There are lots of fans that agree with that and are very critical of their own fan base, but there are also fans that start saying, hey, give us something to cheer about. We'll cheer our lungs out if the product on the field is good. So there's that debate that goes back and forth, and it gets quite animated, quite contentious there. And I know the Giants organization would like a louder fan base for some of these games, but I do also think that there, you know, fans do have a point who argue the opposite, saying, you know, we, you know, give us something to root for. Don't fall apart in the fourth quarter, giving three touchdowns in a row, and we'll be louder for you. So it's that type of thing. And the home record, as you point out, Paul, it has been fairly poor consistently over the last few years.
Yeah, no question. Hey, let me ask you something, Eric, because you guys obviously have a fan base across the country and maybe even across the world. Everybody knows that you got a great contingent of Giant fans that will go to Philadelphia down the turnpike, that will go down to Washington. I mean, it's drivable. I get that. I have a lot of friends who are in Carolina, and they tell me Carolina's got a pretty heavy fan base. Do you get that sense, and will the Giants have much support on Sunday?
Oh, yeah, I think they will. Matter of fact, there's a radio station down there that has me come on every year that is a New York sports radio station in Charlotte. Every year they have me come on, and, you know, they're talking Giants, they're talking Yankees and Mets, and they always say what a big turnout they have for the home game when the Giants show up down there. And I think you see that on television when you see the Giants playing down there. There seems to be a fairly big crowd that generally takes over the stadium, especially last year when they had the big blowout. If you saw any of the crowd shots, there were a lot of Giants fans in that stadium. So I think there are a lot of transplanted New York and New Jerseyans living in that area. So I expect a pretty good turnout.
Eric Kennedy joining us again, owner of Big Blue Interactive. Eric, curious to get the fans' thoughts on what's going on with Eli Manning. 7 interceptions, this team as a whole, 10 turnovers. But David Wilson just got absolutely destroyed after fumbling the ball twice in one game. I know that we're talking apples and oranges when you compare David Wilson to Eli Manning, what Eli Manning means to this team. But I'm just curious, what are the fans saying about Eli Manning right now?
That has been probably the hottest debate this week, and many discussions about what is going on with Eli, and everyone has different theories. Obviously, people know he's not playing well. Some people think he's pressing, and that's based somewhat on Justin Tuck's comments earlier in the week. Others think it's a reflection of what's going on in the game with no running game whatsoever. So the play-action pass isn't there. The offensive line, particularly the inside of the offensive line, has been very shaky in pass protection. So I think there are fans who are saying, look, Eli's got to stop these turnovers, and he's got to make more plays. He's the highest paid player on this team. He's the heart of this team. He's got to make plays. While other fans are saying he needs help. You need to give him some, you know, you can, even the elite quarterbacks need help from you know, receivers have to stop dropping passes or running the wrong routes. And then at the same time, they've got to help him out with somewhat of a running game as well, too. But I think everybody realizes he's not playing his best football, and I think he would admit that, and I think he has admitted that. The question is why is that happening? And the reasons vary. I think that the nervousness comes from this is he had a great 2011 season. We all know that the fourth quarter comebacks, he basically carried that team, which was also near dead last in rushing that year. Last year, I think they were middle of the pack rushing, and he just didn't seem to be playing as well as he did in 2011. He still was playing very well, but just it wasn't the same caliber of player. This year, obviously, starting off very poorly. Some of those interceptions aren't his fault, but some of them obviously are. So the concern is, are we back to the old sort of pre-2011 Eli that it's just going to be up and down like this, or is he going to get on a hot streak here and start showing us more signs of how he played back in 2011?
Good stuff. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Always interesting to hear what the fans are feeling and saying, especially on your message boards. Owner of Big Blue Interactive. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Enjoy the game.
Thank you.
You
bye
got
bye,
it.
Guys.
You know, Anita, I think one of the things that he touched on, and it goes into Eli Manning's play right now, you know, yes, things around him are not what they're supposed to be. And I've heard the argument made before about how much better the Giants' running game was statistically last year than it was the year before when they went to the Super Bowl and won. But the fact of the matter is, if you were to look at a graph of the Giants' rushing totals last year, you would find spikes and dips and spikes and dips all over that chart like a seesaw. And that's because the running game was not consistent. It's not okay to rush for 135 yards 1 week and 75 the next week and then say, well, okay, we're averaging 105 yards a game. That's not the same. You're better off averaging literally 105 yards a game, but by running for 95 and 120 and then 105. You want to be more consistent than what the Giants were last season. They had too many rushing games last year where they did nothing. And that is how you build respect among defensive coordinators. That is how you can truly have confidence in a game plan that incorporates both ends of your offensive attack. And so I think people sometimes are fooled when they say, well, the Giants ran for like 110 yards a game last year, and that's okay, middle of the pack. No, it's not okay. It was too inconsistent, and that has an impact on how defenses play you.
201-939-4513. We've got callers on. Let's head out. Let's go to Andrew, calling in from New Jersey. Andrew, first up here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
The best line was Paul said, Eli went awry. Hopefully this weekend he won't go awry. And Tuck, I understand what he's saying, but the great coach Bill Parcells would say, you are what your record says you are.
Indeed.
And the running backs, David Wilson and Darrell Scott, what I noticed about their running style is that they look for the home run, or they just look for the one seam and make one cut, and they try to sprint and outrun everyone to the end zone. And most of the time, there's not going to be that gap. That's why Tiki Barber, when he said he saved Coughlin's job single-handedly in the Washington game, there were gaping holes by the offensive line. And usually there's not going to be clear gaping holes, so they need to, I think, pattern their running style more like Amon Bradshaw or Warwick Dunn. They need to jitterbug and dance and try to find an opening instead of just taking the ball, and they try to sprint or like a wide receiver doing an end around. They just
Andrew,
try to sprint.
Can you hold on a second? I'm going to go in the other direction because Tom Coughlin himself mentioned this yesterday. How about breaking some tackles for a change?
Right. Yeah, those little guys don't really.
Most of the criticism of the Giants running backs the last couple of years, whether it was Jacobs or Bradshaw, was that they're dancing too much. They're not aggressive enough. They're not hitting the hole. They're being too passive. I'm going to tell you, I'm a little sick of watching Giants running backs not break tackles.
Exactly. That's what my wife said, that they were going down too easy. When she first started getting into football in like 2008, the Jets had a great running game, and she was saying that the Giants and Brandon Jacobs, like, how come they get hit and they just go down?
But the problem with Brandon is he's got three guys draped on him every time he touches the ball. That's a little bit difficult to deal with.
I'm going to put my dad on. He has a question about the running backs, but I had a question. The coach, Denver, Shanahan, in Denver, he ran like a different kind of running blocking scheme, and even the former Giant went there. That didn't really pan out here.
Ron Dane.
And he had a good season there. And do they still run that blocking scheme, and can you explain why is that different, and are they the only team that runs that scheme? And thanks for taking the call. I'll put my dad on. Thanks.
Well, he's talking about the zone blocking scheme, which Shanahan's famous for. Hey, Andrew, how are you? I just
want
to tell
you.
Go ahead.
Has Harnowski improved enough? Because he played the first game. I didn't notice him too much the second game. They had the other guy in Jacobs more on the second game.
Well, no. Harnowski got about a dozen or so snaps, I believe, in game two as well. But quite honestly, if you have watched him, you've seen a lack of production there. He's not right. That's the bottom line. I don't think physically he's where he needs to be, and I think he's also very rusty.
Okay. All right, thank you for the attention.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
those two guys really crack us up, don't they?
They're great. I'm going to put my dad on. I think it's adorable. But you were responding to the gentleman's first.
Yeah, the zone blocking scheme, to understand what that's all about. You know, in some blocking schemes, guys go man-on-man, hat-on-hat, helmet-on-helmet, or they're blocking a gap. In the zone blocking scheme, each guy is responsible for a box, for an imaginary box that he has to block for. And it's like, okay, you're not blocking your opponent per se, you're blocking within your box. And, you know, it's not the most popular, but I'll tell you what, if you can get it down to a T, it can be very effective. But it also takes certain types of skills and talents to be able to do that all the time. And it's very complicated. It can fall apart in a hurry. You know, if one guy's out of place, it really messes up. Sometimes, you know, you can still make plays if you're using a regular blocking scheme, and that's why a lot of people don't like to gamble and go to that overhaul. But I will tell you this, you know, bottom line, if you don't take care of your own business up front, your running backs aren't going to be able to do a whole heck of a lot, no matter what blocking scheme you're using.
201-939-4513. We're going to continue with our calls with you for the next 30 minutes, so we're going to do our darndest to get everybody in. Let's go to Hugo, calling in from New Jersey. Hugo, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hey, good morning, guys. Let me start off by saying I'm a big fan of this coaching staff, but I think they're in a real tough situation here. I mean, maybe we just don't have the personnel, right, to do the things the coaching staff has done in the past, which has been very successful, to achieve the balance. I mean, the plan, I think, with respect to the offensive line this year was cross your fingers and hope that Beal, Snee, Voss, you know, they find the fountain of youth, you know, as our GM likes to say, this is a show-me business. And I believe my eyes last year when I was seeing those players starting to decline pretty seriously, compounded by the injuries to Hanofsky, the fact that we replaced a tight end that could block with a tight end that's more a pass catcher. Maybe we just don't have the horse, and we don't have a power back, right? I mean, Jacobs is an attempt to get there. So I don't know how to strike the balance. Maybe the Giants have to develop a short passing game as a substitute for a running game. And maybe, you know, that plays to Wilson's strength because he's better in space. He could be maybe like a mega type for us. I think there's all interconnected, right? You try to go with your philosophy in the first quarter of the game, you bang your head against the wall, and then you have to play with your hair on fire for the rest of the game, and that just leads to mistakes. So it's unfortunate, but I just don't think we have the personnel. And then the linebackers are another area of weakness. If you notice what Peyton Manning did in that game last week, very smart. He said, hey, this Terrell Thomas guy, he's darn good. So let's put a 12 package bringing a tight end and a back or two tight ends.
Well, Clady got hurt, and that's why they went double tight end.
Clady got hurt.
Clady got hurt. Their offensive tackle got hurt, and that's why they went to the double tight end package because they needed more up front.
Hugo touches on something very interesting, and I want to throw this out your way, and that is, you know, this, yes, I get it. This is Kevin Gilbride's system. It's been successful. It's been implemented here with the Giants. It's what him and Eli do. But if it's not working because the components of the offensive line or the pass protection or the running game and play action isn't working, then why not go to some type of dink and dunk? Because what have we been talking about all preseason is the weapons that are on this team. Wow, the weapons. Look at, you know, what does a defensive player do? He looks on that line of scrimmage with the Giants, and he sees Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz and Myers and Randall and Wilson. And why not implement some dink and dunk into this offense just to get the ball in the hands, Paul, of players who can put up yards after the catch and create, as opposed to... I think it's an interesting debate to have. If it's not broke, then no need to fix it. But right now it's broke. So do you continue try to put a square peg into a round hole, or do you change things up a little bit?
Well, I think the problem is, Anita, before you go to that extreme, you want to be able to see if there's truly a trend. And I think if we go back to week one against Dallas, this offense, despite the fact that they didn't run the ball very well, they certainly moved it well, and the pass downfield was there all night. Eli was able to hit big plays downfield. So that was not a deterrent or a reason to start changing the game plan yet, at least not after week one. Now we look at week two, and we see that it definitely was a problem, and there is a yellow flag that does say, hey, if this does become more of a trend, they're going to have to do something different. So I agree with you. I think it should be on the board of consideration. I don't know how much right now, today, you make those changes, especially against a horrible Carolina secondary this weekend, which just should be carved up like a Thanksgiving Day turkey. I mean, to me, I don't know if you have to necessarily go to the dink and dunk against the Panthers. They're just not going to be able to stop anything downfield. And so I would probably just attack the living crap out of them and not worry about it.
Okay, well, you're focusing on a secondary that's all beaten, battered, and in the infirmary. There you go. But what about this defensive line? I mean, listen, I had Spencer Pasinger and Roman Oben on Big Blue Hits yesterday, and they could not say enough wonderful things about the Carolina Panthers' defensive line as well as their linebacking core.
Well, they're active, but they haven't had a lot of production in the first 2 weeks. You know, Keekly, the middle linebacker, very, very quick, agile, has tremendous range. No doubt about that. You know, they'll probably drop him to coverage a lot, I would think, try to get some of that underneath stuff. But in terms of their front four, they've got some ability there, and they're pretty darn good against the run. But to this point, they haven't really generated much of a pass rush. I mean, E.J. Manuel, really? E.J. Manuel went down the field 80-plus yards without any timeouts to win that game last weekend.
Well, what about week one when they held the Seattle Seahawks to 12 points, Paul?
Again, I always tend to believe that week one results are rather skewed because there's a lot of discombobulation and a lot of confusion and a lot of surprises and a lot of teams that aren't ready. I'm inclined to put less stock in week one results than probably any other week of the regular season. But that's just me.
201-939-4513. We continue with our calls here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We go to Miguel in Pennsylvania.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, hi. How are you guys doing? Good morning. My question actually was, I've been noticing how the opening season has started already with the, you know, the Giants, you know what I mean, causing the fumbles and stuff like that with David Wilson. That was week one. We already know that. But other questions I have, what is the defensive line, you know, is going to do to be able to stop some of these, you know, I mean, last week's game, I mean, with Denver, the pass rush, you know, it wasn't good, but it was somewhat all right. Basically, just my question is, what is going to the defense is going to do to be able to stop and get more or cause at least more, you know what I'm saying, cause them to fumble if possible, grab the ball more, you know what I mean, like more ball time is the only thing I'm, you know, I actually what my question really is to them.
I think what you're really looking for are some more turnovers and more sacks by this defense, right? That's what you really want.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and you know what? Perry Fuel wants exactly the same thing. And the bottom line is the defensive ends are not winning enough of their one-on-one battles, and consequently, quarterbacks are a little too comfortable back there right now, and that's one of the reasons the Giants aren't getting as many picks. It's really very simple.
Wow.
Thank you. All right.
Miguel, thank you for your phone call. Appreciate it. Let's go down to South Florida. We've got Mike calling in from Palm Beach, baby. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for letting me speak. I tell you, I'm down here in Dolphin Country, and it's sad. You know, the one thing that I know is this team coming in, I'm really surprised that we had David Wilson as our starter. Yeah, he has tons of talent, but he's been known to put the ball on the ground. And to not have a veteran, somebody there, okay, we know about the injury to in the preseason, and but even still, you know, you had to have somebody in the wings. And honestly, Brandon Jacobs is not the answer. I would have went with McGahee myself, but because Jacobs knew the system, I get it. But what was said earlier, I absolutely agree. Until Perry Fuel gets that defense, I mean, that's what won our Super Bowls. Yeah, Eli threw probably two of the greatest passes ever thrown and caught in Super Bowl history. And the one thing that I'm holding on to is, and I firmly believe this, we're going to turn it around in Carolina, We did it last year when Cam was the man, and we had him crying and pouting on the sidelines afterwards, and it's going to start again. And you know what? We will be in the Meadowlands in February. We've just got to get that D straightened out. The offense, I'm not worried about. I think it's going to come back around. We have great receivers. The offensive line has to gel. It takes time. But it's two games into the season. Let's not get out on the ledge now. Coughlin, he's going to get hold of that team. And David Wilson is going to do some big things. I like the way he was holding on to the ball. And, you know, we had the problem with Tiki, and then he bailed, and, you know, he missed the Super Bowl. David Wilson is going to be spectacular. It's just, you know, we got to give him some time, and that line's got to block. But above all, what was said earlier, I totally agree with, is the pass rush. We were fearsome. We're not. Yeah, like the gentleman said earlier, that, you know, people are sitting back there, you know, doing their nails. I mean, they have way too much time. And when you give any quarterback time, it's a recipe for disaster.
All right, well, look, I'm going to let you go now, but I will tell you what. The truth of the matter is JPP missed so much time because of that back surgery, and still, in my mind, he's in the preseason. You know, he's only played two games, Anita. I think that, you know, he was talking yesterday about how he feels he's getting close to being ready to go. He came back too early. I you know, medically, he did not. And the Giants have used him, and they put him out there, and he's okay. He didn't get hurt. He didn't suffer any setbacks. That's all great. But in terms of football production and being able to contribute to this team on Sunday, he came back too early. And that's just the bottom line. And so folks have to understand, you wanted him back. Okay, he made it back for opening day. That's what you guys wanted. But look what you got. Let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks with him as he finally starts to get the oil going in his machine.
The caller also mentioned running back David Wilson. And, you know, I think a lot of fans, and including myself, I was hoping that David would have an opportunity to really redeem himself last week. Against the Denver Broncos, and we talked about this yesterday. I'm a firm believer, especially at the running back position. There's an ebb and flow that takes place in the course of a football game, and if you're a running back and you're not in there getting a number of carries and a number of touches, and he only got seven, I don't think that's enough. I don't think it's enough to warrant a running back to really get into a feel and a vibe and a flow of a game. This coming week, what do you anticipate? I mean, are you, because this running game really needs a kick in the butt, and we've heard a number of players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, we've heard Roll come out and say, listen, we need him out there. He needs to make plays. Do you feel we're going to get a heavier dose of David Wilson this week? What are you anticipating out of that backfield, Paul?
You know what makes this difficult is that what we said a few moments ago about Carolina's defense. They're better against the run than they are against the pass. They're decimated. Even if they were healthy, this is a defense that does not defend the aerial attack very well. They are susceptible to big plays. They simply don't have talent in their back four. So if you're the Giants, do you worry about trying to establish a running game against a team that is far inferior against the pass? Wow. If you're Kevin Gilbride, what do you do? Boy, you got a really bad itch to want to throw the football.
Also, don't you want to keep Cam off the field? Don't you want to eat up the time of possession?
You know what? He doesn't intimidate me in that way at all. He's not one of those guys who I feel I need to keep the ball away from. Really, I don't think he's that good.
Interesting. 201-939-4513. We continue with our calls here on Big Blue Hits Live. With you for the next 15 minutes, let's go to Blake in Seattle.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Welcome.
First-time caller. I just wanted to touch base and get a pulse on, you know, Giants organization, how they're feeling about Eli turning the ball over as he has been. Obviously, there's been kind of a pattern over recent years, a lot of turnover, which puts additional pressure on the defense to go right back out on the field. And just kind of, you know, what's the mood around there? It seems very nonchalant, especially in the interviews that I watch pretty much regularly, that, you know, we have to move on, obviously. I understand that as an organization. But what's the overall pulse of this? And is it a big concern of Tom Coughlin's down there?
I think it's a big concern But what are you going to do? I mean, Tom Coughlin kind of joked at it yesterday in his press conference. He's like, what am I going to do, bench Eli for Curtis Painter? Yeah. I mean, you know, you just you got to hope that, A, the offensive line is going to start blocking better. You've got to hope, B, that a rushing attack is really going to kind of solidify itself so that Eli can get into his comfort zone of play action. You know, Eli Manning is not a Michael Vick or Eli is not going to make things create themselves for him. An offensive line has to protect Eli Manning. They have to give him at least 3 seconds. A rushing attack needs to be developed in order for Eli to really – Eli, his bread and butter is play action. So, you know, right. he loves that. So there are certain things I think. So to answer your question, is there a concern about Eli? Yes. But realistically, no one's – Coughlin, Kevin, they're not going to bench Eli. So they have to look outside of the Eli realm and say, okay, well, what do we need to do and improve to help Eli get better and not force throws and not throw interceptions? And that is making this offensive line work better and also really get the running game, get the rushing attack solidified. And if those two things come together, then I don't think you're looking at an Eli Manning seven interception two game realm right now.
Right. It just doesn't seem that he's been under a lot of duress on some of the INTs he's thrown. Yeah, the line hasn't done their greatest job, but some of his INTs just seem to be decision making. Or maybe a lack of communication with
a couple of them.
I think he's getting rid of the ball too soon.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to get tackled. It's one thing to get a hit. It's another thing to get tackled. And if there's one thing you know, if you've been watching the Manning brothers, they do not like to get tackled. So, okay.
And they're allergic to getting hit.
I think he's in what I've seen, Paul. And tell me if you think I'm wrong. But what I'm seeing is I'm seeing an Eli Manning who maybe is rushing the ball and getting rid of it too soon, and maybe forcing the ball too soon, so that he doesn't get sacked and he doesn't get hit.
I think that's partly true, and I also think it's partly true that he's just trying to make a play as well.
Right.
Try to spark this team, because how long have we been talking about a team that doesn't seem to have a firecracker lit under its butt? You know? And I'll tell you something else, too. Okay? It doesn't help when you're playing uphill. I mean, the Giants have been behind in both of these games so far, to Dallas and to the Broncos, where they have had to play uphill. And any quarterback will tell you, your mentality changes when you're behind. It's just the way it is. And that's not conducive to what Eli wants to do either. I mean, it would help if they're not down by a couple of scores. He himself said that the other day, on Monday, by the way. He's like, you know, I get everything that we're talking about, but, you know, it would be great if we're not down going into the fourth quarter or in the fourth quarter by 2 scores. I mean, try to keep the game a little bit closer. Again, though, that's also on the offense itself, for the mistakes that they've made and the turnovers they've made, putting themselves in that position.
201-939-4513. Again, all things social media. You can find us on Twitter at Giants. Make sure you include that hashtag GiantsChat. Paul, we continue on the left coast. We've got Bob calling in from California. Bob, welcome.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about, I think the, you know, Giants got so many weapons out there. I think the big play mentality, our greatest strength may be our greatest weakness here at times. You know, I'm listening to you talk about, you know, we don't have a running game, you know, we don't know whether it's going to develop or not. There have been a lot of great teams that didn't have much of a running game, including the Packers, the Giants, and Denver. And they go to their short game, and we don't have a short game. We got to go to our short pass, quick outs when Eli's getting rushed. He can't always have the long ball, and I think that's one of the problems. They're not going to their short game. He's trying to force the long ball, and it hurts us.
All right, now time out.
Short yardage game, even in the red. We don't have a red zone game. We don't have a short yardage game.
Right, now,
even
time
in
out.
The middle of the field, we don't have.
I got. Well, I didn't necessarily mean to cut him off, but I did want to get him to just pause for a second, because in the red zone, you've got to have your power running game going. That is critical if you're going to succeed inside the opponent's 20. In terms of the short game, Anita, I want to address this with you, because they do have a bit of a short game in that that's why Brandon Myers was brought here. Brandon Myers is supposed to be that safety valve, that short outlet pass, that second and third option for Eli when the deep ball isn't there. And already he's caught, 13 balls in 2 weeks. The problem is And I think what you're also alluding to is that that part of the game plan is not a significant part of the game plan. It's not a priority in the game plan. They're not looking to necessarily dink and dunk and use the short offense or the short range offense as a regular part of what they want to do. They're strictly using it right now as a safety valve, as an afterthought, as, okay, we'll kind of take that and settle for that if it's there. The bottom line is, though, they signed Brandon Myers understanding that he only averages about 9 yards a catch. He is that guy that we're talking about who's capable of doing these types of things. Now, the question becomes, do you want to make him more a part of your offense? Do you want to rely on him a little bit more? Should he be more of a primary option instead of a lower option on the ladder? That's really, I think, what the question becomes, because he's here. Brandon Myers is here to provide that part of the offense if you want to make it a high priority.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Kushan.
It's Kushan.
Kushan, welcome.
Hi, Anita. I just want to say I'm a big fan. I listen to the show every day, and Anita, it's nice to have a woman who not only asks questions, but you actually give in-depth analysis of the game, and we don't have enough women out there. So I'm so glad that you are the way you are.
Thank you so much.
I finally had a chance to call in because I'm a teacher, and I had some free time. I wanted to respond to a comment yesterday about you guys got a little upset that Giants fans are always asking to trade Ryan Nassib. And I'm actually one of those fans because I was a little upset when the Giants decided to waste a fourth-round draft pick on a quarterback when that really wasn't a glaring need. We were 31st in the league last year in defense, and there were so many other positions that I felt that we could have drafted for, a linebacker, a safety, offensive lineman. And especially if we're an organization that was trying to win now, I felt that, you know, Eli at least has another, you know, 6, 7, 8 years left in him, and we possibly could have, when that time came, we could have drafted a quarterback like, you know, the first round or something like that and get someone like the Andrew Luck. So it's not crazy. I don't think Ryan Nassib is going to be the future. I think we did draft him for trade bait to probably trade him for a second-round pick, but I just felt that we could have got a better position because we're struggling right now. We don't have any linemen. We don't have any linebackers. We're sitting at safety, and so that draft pick could have been used for that. And my last comment is, as far as the defensive line, I think – like I said, I don't think Justin Tuck's going to be here next year. I think that the future is probably JPP and DeMontre Moore, and they'll probably draft another defensive end. And I just think that I know all Giants fans want that fifth ring, but we might have to just realize that we're kind of in a rebuilding year because the line is just not what we're used to. The pass rush is gone. So if you could just your comments about that, and I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
No, she's your fan. She's your fan. Okay, I would say this. I understand your point about Nassib in that Eli Manning is still in his prime and he should be the quarterback for the present and probably for the immediate future. I get that. But at the same time, you don't draft a developmental quarterback like that just to turn around and get rid of him. So I'm in agreement with Anita when she said yesterday, you know, this is a guy who they have some hope for and they're going to want to try to nurture and see if, in fact, he's going to be capable of helping lead this NFL team if necessary. At the same time, I will tell you, they drafted him in the fourth round, okay? He was not a first-round pick. He was not a second-round pick. He was not even a third-round pick. He was a third-day pick. Now, you know what that means? To put it very nicely, a third-day pick is not a top priority. Jerry Reese himself will tell you, your top three picks, your first three rounds, are the guys who have to be able to play and contribute and be a big part of your rotation as soon as possible. Your fourth-round picks and beyond are guys that you want to develop and work with. So, to be honest with you, the Giants could have drafted another position if they wanted to in the fourth round, but it still would have been a developmental player in all likelihood. It would not have been a guy who would be helping this pass rush today. It would probably not be a guy who would be stepping into the offensive line today. So please understand that.
I have a question for you. A number of people felt that Nassib was one of the best quarterbacks in this draft.
Two, as a matter of fact, better, a lot of people thought.
Yeah, better than Matt, who is the number three right now in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
as we know, E.J. Manuel was the only quarterback that went in the first round.
Yeah.
Why do you feel, in the Giants jumped all over him in that fourth round, but why do you feel Nazib dropped so far? Why do you, if a lot of people had him touted as possibly the second best quarterback coming out of this draft, why do you feel he fell to the fourth round?
True reasons. He does not have great arm strength, and there is a propensity, much like in baseball where people say, hey, we want that 95-mile-an-hour heater. There's a propensity right now in football to look for the guy who has the cannon for an arm, the guy who can go back there like Kaepernick, who happens to also run very well, but, boy, he can whip it downfield. Okay? Ryan Nassib is not going to put a football through anybody's chest. He does not have that type of gun. And so that's going to cause him to fall some. And I think the other thing, too, Anita, we've seen it out there on the practice field. He's not your typical tall, boxy, big, broad-shoulder type of quarterback. He's more on the slight side. And because he's not a runner, he's not a Wilson, he is not a Kaepernick, he's not a Freeman, he's not one of those guys who's going to necessarily run around back there where you can excuse the size because he's going to find rushing, passing lanes with his feet. I think a lot of people decided that, you know what? Maybe he's just not quite tall enough for what we want to do. And I think that caused him to drop too. And you know what? I think that's fair. I think both of those criticisms are fair. But I would also tell you that Drew Brees is not really a runner. He's basically a pocket passer, and he's only about 6 feet tall. So, you know, there were always exceptions to the rule. But I do think that there are some people who held those two things against Nassib.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Chris in New Jersey. Chris, welcome.
Hi, Anita and Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a couple comments and then a quick question for you guys. Just want to stay on the positive side. I mean, the secondary up to this point has really been a bright spot. I feel like, you know, because of that pass rush, I mean, that's obviously been the issue. But I think if you want to talk some positives, the secondary pretty much has held its own, you know, considering what they've been through the last few years. And the previous caller, talking about Perry Fuel and the defense from a couple years ago when we won the Super Bowl, the secondary was the biggest weak spot on the defensive end. Now, unfortunately, it switched because now it seems like the edge rushers aren't getting to the quarterback. But I will say the middle with Jenkins and Joseph, they seem to be pretty stout in stopping the run, you know, up the middle.
Well, you make a very good point, because if you've looked at this secondary over the first two games, you have found out that they have only given up 4 completions of 20 yards or more and only 1 pass completion of longer than 25. It was a 36-yarder from Manning to Caldwell in the first quarter the other day against Denver. That's pretty darn impressive. And if you listen to us during the course of the summer, we tried to tell you that the secondary was the Giants' best unit during training camp. This is not a surprise to those of us who are here every day. The real surprise is, as you say, that they're holding up so well considering they're not getting a lot of pass rush from the front four. That's not supposed to happen. When you don't get heat, your secondary is supposed to collapse. Right. Somehow they've held up and held up well.
Right. And just one more comment and then a question. On the offensive line, you know, what they're going through right now, it really makes you appreciate what you had when you had a Sean O'Hara and a fiery Rich Seibert in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like when those two guys have left, it's just changed. And
can I
really
throw one more name out there?
That running game.
How about Kareem McKenzie?
Yeah, exactly.
He was a force. He was a road grader. He was a physical player, gave you a good push at right tackle in the running game. I thought he was an underrated player when he was here.
Right, right. And a quick question before you guys let me go. I read up a little bit on Alan Bradford, you know, what the situation was over in Seattle, how they tried to pass him through waivers, and Norton said he was the best tackler at the linebacker position.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts? How long before this guy possibly gets some good amount of playing time in the middle?
It's going to be pretty hard for him to get caught up to speed. Now, he could surprise us and wind up getting some snaps at some point soon, but I just don't know. I mean, how different is the Seattle system compared to what the Giants are trying to run here with Perry Fuel? I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I haven't studied the Seahawks playbook or their system very much. So it would be very difficult to gauge what his learning curve is going to be. But understand this. He was a fullback at USC. Pete Carroll brought him up there on a favor and then converted him to a linebacker. He's small. I mean, it doesn't take you but 2 seconds to see him on the field and say, really?
Right.
Really? He's a linebacker? 5'10"? I mean, okay. We'll see.
Well, I'll tell you this. One of the most, in growing up down in South Florida and covering the University of Miami, you know, I covered that team through the fact that for a while it was called Quarterback U, for a while it was called Tight End U, and then for a long time it was called Linebacker U. In fact, Jesse Armstead, who's here, part of the coaching staff, I remember covering him at the University of Miami, and he was an absolute beast. Rohan Marley, son of Bob Marley, was a linebacker for the University of Miami, and he was one of the most impressive linebackers I've ever seen play at the University of Miami. And he was like 5'2", but packed such a powerful punch. He was so much fun to watch.
Wow.
Rohan Marley, mark it down. Check out YouTube later on today. I know you will.
Okay.
Okay.
Bob, you know, I study film.
Bob Marley's son. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Dave in New Jersey. Dave, welcome.
Good morning, Anita and Paul.
Hi.
I know you're rushed for time. Just one thing that has been bothering me as a Giant fan for quite a while, and I think it's finally come home to roost this year, is I feel that one of the biggest mistakes the Giants have made in the last few years is when they obtained David Boss to be their center a couple of years ago. They had a guy, Sean O'Hara, like we were just talking about, how the offense, they bullied people. And since David Boss has been here, I mean, he's a decent pass blocker, but they get no push up in the middle. This has been coming on for a couple of years. Even when Bradshaw, they were here and the Giants were running, they always started to have problems when they got down close to the line, close to the goal line.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you. I don't think that David Boss has performed to the numbers of his contract. There is no question about that. When they brought him here and they paid him big money a few years ago, they expect him to be very good. I don't know if they thought he'd go to the Pro Bowl, but I thought they wanted him to be very good. Instead, he's been adequate at best. Now, he's also been hurt a lot. He has had a wide variety of injuries, and I'm talking about a whole assortment, a laundry list of injuries since he's been here. And they've been all different types of injuries, upper body, head, lower body. The guy is scotch taped together. Now, I know you sometimes can't grade a guy fairly because he's been hurt a lot, but let's face it, durability is also part of what makes a good NFL player. I would agree with you in that David Boss has not given the Giants exactly what they paid for. Now, the only good thing I will say is he is still young enough at this stage of his career where if he can get healthy, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, and shake off some of that rust, maybe the best football from David Boss is still yet to come. I know the Giants need that. I know they want that. Whether or not they'll ever get it, I really don't know. And that's about as fair as I can be.
All right, so just to sum up, give you an idea of what's going on here at the facility today. Practice is, I believe, what, 11:55, right?
Yes, it is.
Practice at 11:55. Players will be made available to the media around 1:45, 1:50 today. We'll be in the locker room getting, again, more player reaction as they look forward to taking on Cammy Cam and the Panthers on Sunday afternoon. Also,
coordinators today, too. We get to hear from Kevin and
Kevin
Perry.
And Perry. We will talk to them, and you can find all of that later on this afternoon on Giants.com. And then 4 p.m. Eastern time, Paul Dottino, Roman Obin, and myself will be on Big Blue Hits Live. And you can watch that on Giants.com. So we'll be breaking down the game. I'll have my little fantasy football segment, which obviously we're going to talk about Trent Richardson. Big trade that went down yesterday. Trent Richardson going from the Cleveland Browns to Indy in exchange for a first-round draft pick.
Which, by the way, tells me a lot about what the Colts think of Ahmad Bradshaw. Really does.
So, and apparently there's a chance that the Browns might announce the signing of Willis McGahee later on this afternoon as well. So all that information we'll have for you as well on the show. So set your alarms. Make sure you tune in. Big Blue Hits Live, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.